In 1945, the country's colleges and universities enrolled just over 1.5 million students. By 1947, the total number jumped to more than 2.3 million, and nearly half of those were vets. Bill Gates Sr. says schools scrambled to house the crush of new students.
And there were dormitories on the campus where I went. I think that was true in a lot of places, but the campus itself had these kind of shack-like dormitories where a lot of us who were on the bill lived.
Gates used his benefit to attend the University of Washington.
It was totally different picture than what one would see today. I mean, we're talking about men in their late 20s, early 30s, men with families, men who had had some kind of a career already. So the maturity level on the campus was considerably different than it had been before the war. Most of the time I was using the GI Bill, I was in law school, and that was a very mature, even kind of powerful crowd, because here were people who were grown up, had ideas of their own about the ways things should be.
Statutorily, you could train for up to 48 months.
Again, the VA's Dennis Douglas.
It had to be done, I believe, in a 7 or 8 year window after you left military service. The only requirement is, I believe they had to be on active duty for like 90 days or something like that, but it's not like you had to serve 2 or 3 years. There were people with less service than that who also benefited by the GI Bill.
Not only were they crowding the campuses, they were changing the culture of higher education.
There was no joke, and there wasn't a lot of schoolboy stuff going on.
Again, Bill Gates Sr.
These were grown men, in some cases women, who were thinking about their livelihood and supporting their families. So it was serious business, and it was very competitive. These people were hard workers, and I was still comparatively a pretty young fellow, and it made quite an impression on me, and it's certainly made going to school a somewhat bigger job than it would have been in the days before the GI Bill.
You know, we basically paid a benefit. It was that if you wanted to go to school or you wanted to receive some training, you were limited only by your aptitudes, abilities, and your dreams.
Again, Dennis Douglas.
The GI Bill, the original GI Bill, created 91 or 92,000 scientists, a quarter of a million accountants, about 238,000 teachers.
The children of miners, farmers, and factory workers seized the opportunity to transform themselves and their country. By taking advantage of their access to higher education, they built the modern American economic machine. In the 50s, 60s, and 70s, average income increased steadily at 2 to 2.5% a year, a rate that has never been matched since. Dennis Douglas says that extraordinary growth was possible because of a huge national investment.
I've seen a statistic that VA paid out about $14 billion in benefits, education benefits, to those World War II veterans.
Well, $14 billion was just the education title. By the time things were all said and done, $14 billion is more than a Marshall Plan in Europe.
UC Berkeley professor Kathleen Friedel.
We spent more on the education title on the World War II GI Bill than we did in the Marshall Plan. And Americans, legitimately or not, are fined of taking credit for the economic recovery of Europe by virtue of the Marshall Plan. So it's interesting that we had our own Marshall Plan for the veterans of the United States.
Sometime in the early 70s, Congress contracted for a study that showed the return to the federal government on that $14 billion investment was about 8 times. In other words, the return on that dollar in taxes received was about 8 to 1.
You know, I don't think you have to argue very long about the fact that that had an enormously positive effect on our society.
Bill Gates Sr.
We had people being engineers who would otherwise have been truck drivers. Wonderful, training of a society that was going into a period of time when sophistication, professional knowledge, terribly important to the country.
Button up your hats, coats, boots, and everything. Leave your worries on the doorstep, 'cause we're gone by and by. Just direct your feet. You look neat on the sunny side of the street.
Coming up, former Congressman Ronald Dellums gets his start with the GI Bill.
So I joined the Marine Corps and promised my mother that I would go join the service and get the GI Bill and make something of myself.
You're listening to the story of the GI Bill. I'm Holly Kernan. You're listening to The Story of the GI Bill, a production of KALW News in San Francisco. I'm Holly Kernan. By 1951, the number of people graduating from college had tripled since America entered World War II. Dennis Douglas says society saw other impacts as well.
There were a total of six provisions in the original GI Bill, and the three that seemed to get the most recognition because they were probably the most popular features are the home loan program, the education program, and the unemployment program.
Well, I certainly wouldn't have bought a house as soon. No. I was 25, I was just married, and my wife and I used the GI Bill to buy our first home.
Bill Gates Sr.
The day we moved into the house was a pretty exciting day, but I guess that's true of everybody, a man and wife who have a house for the first time. But I guess I'd be less than honest if I didn't say that, you know, there was so many of us buying homes on the GI Bill. It was no particular event for me to have closed a loan on the basis of the GI Bill. I was tickled to death that I was enjoying an interest rate which was a whole lot more favorable than a lot of people.
It was a 4% 20-year loan at the time, and it was something that veterans felt they could afford, and they flocked to it. In fact, I saw an interesting statistic. There were about 5 million World War II veterans who bought homes under the home loan provision of the original GI Bill.
Again, Dennis Douglas from the Department of Veterans Affairs.
The biggest feature, which is still true today, is it was a no-down payment home loan. So, in fact, it's interesting because there was a gentleman by the name of Levitt who started building a series of homes, in effect, a new suburb in Long Island, out on Long Island. He built 17,000 homes in a place called Levittown. And you could buy this home for less than $8,000. And it basically meant, I think at a 4% loan, your monthly payments were like $60 a month. And it included a washer and a dryer and a range and a refrigerator in the kitchen. So it began to create suburbia.
And it helped a long-depressed nation realize the American dream. In 1936, at the economic low point of the Great Depression, construction began on only 304,000 houses. But after the war ended, millions of veterans gained the chance to buy a home because they finally had access to affordable loans. Building boomed. More than 1 million houses were built in 1946. By 1950, that number rose to 2 million.
I was born in 1935, so I was a very young kid at that time.
Representative Ronald Dellums served California's 9th District for 28 years and chaired the Congressional Black Caucus.
My uncle was in the Army, and when he came back home, he was able to use the GI Bill to purchase a modest home in South Berkeley. that gave him an opportunity to change his life, because it gave him an opportunity to sink roots in Berkeley, had a modest home, found a job, developed a career, and was able to retire from that.
But not all African-American veterans would benefit from the GI Bill.
Now, the end of the war came along, and everybody was singing that victory song. But there were some boys that felt mighty sad. Well, there was many a man that struts around, gonna have to learn to be taken down, 'cause when it's all over, he'll go back to selling shoes.
Before the civil rights movement of the 1960s, the GI Bill did not serve all veterans equally. Professor Kathleen Friedel says the prejudice began within the U.S. military.
That was right away a selection bias, in the sense that many black veterans participated in protests due with the segregation of the military itself. And they were given blue slips. They were not given honorable discharges. So insofar as one of the eligibility requirements of the GI Bill, and it has to be said one of the few eligibility requirements of the GI Bill, was honorable discharge.
Professor Friedel says even with an honorable discharge, non-white veterans had to deal with institutional racism.
If you were in the South and you were a black veteran, and if you went to a bank, you probably lived somewhere in a black neighborhood. And all of those black neighborhoods were by banks rated the same. They were rated as loan risks. So you didn't get the loan. And that had nothing to do with the GI Bill in a direct way. But because the GI Bill deferred implementation to the bank in this instance, the bank had to approve your loan. And so consistently, black veterans were unable to get housing loans. Again, with schooling, obviously we know that there are traditionally black colleges, you know, throughout the South, and their enrollment skyrocket in the post-war era, because literally veterans are just going to those schools and desperately trying to get a higher education and get the government to pay for it. Their educational opportunities are not nearly as expansive as white veterans could entertain. So there was this discrimination not written into the bill, but written into its implementation.
I have no doubt that's probably true.
The VA's Dennis Douglas.
No doubt there were instances where race may have played a part in whether somebody got into a certain college or not. I think you could say that's kind of been one of our historical flaws, if you will. But the benefit itself was colorblind and genderblind.
In fact, attempts to write segregation and racial favoritism into the GI Bill were defeated. So, despite the discrimination that some African Americans faced, it was the first time many had access to home loans and higher education.
African Americans coming back from the military in World War II, many of them did go to college and started out in community colleges and then went up into four-year institutions after that.
Former Congressman Ronald Dellums.
On a national basis, this was an opportunity for a number of African Americans to go to black land-grant colleges in the South, which really radically altered many of their lives, because for many people, college education was only a dream. But coming back from the military, the GI Bill gave them that reality, and so education became an opportunity.
Many people, including former Congressman Ron Dellums, believe the GI Bill set the stage for the civil rights movement.
Well, I think there's a direct correlation. Many, many African Americans and other minorities did not have the necessary resources to be able to go to college. Had it not been for the GI Bill, they would have not been able to access colleges and universities, changing the socioeconomic circumstances and educational attainment of their families, allowing their children to be able to have a different jumping off spot and their children's children, etc. So it had a geometric effect as I see it.
When Congressman Dellums was graduating from high school in the mid-1950s, the government was revising the original GI Bill. The VA's Dennis Douglas.
It ended in 1956, and it was replaced by really the second GI Bill that came about by virtue of the Korean conflict. They paid an educational assistance allowance of, I believe, $110 a month, whereas the original GI Bill paid the veteran a monthly stipend, but also paid the tuition and fees and books and supplies to the institution that veteran was attending.
You know, there was advertising, you know, because during that time when they were recruiting, the GI Bill was part of the recruitment pitch.
Congressman Ron Dellums decided the GI Bill was his ticket to higher education.
So I joined the Marine Corps and promised my mother that I would go join the service and get the GI Bill and make something of myself.
Congressman Dellums served 2 years in the Marines, then signed up for the second, less generous GI Bill.
Government planners were quite concerned about how expensive it was turning out to be. There was a lot of fraud conducted under the auspices of the education title.
Professor Kathleen Friedel.
And indeed, the Korean War GI Bill was curtailed significantly and curtailed in ways that spoke to the legacy of fraud under the World War II GI Bill. So instead of a veteran in World War II receiving tuition and a stipend, regardless of the school that he was accepted at, a Korean War veteran had $1,500 to spend.
The VA's Dennis Douglas.
So this was one way to address what some in Congress may have felt was a flaw with the first GI Bill, and that is you give all the money to the veteran will pay his or her tuition out of that and take care of their monthly living expenses.
And it's not surprising then that Korean War veterans chose public universities to a greater extent than their World War II forebears because they have a budget in mind.
Former Congressman Ronald Dellums went to Oakland City College and San Francisco State. But because he had a young family, that education almost didn't happen.
I was working out at Oakland Naval Supply from 4 in the afternoon until midnight, which allowed me to go to school in the daytime and then study, you know, until 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning and then get up and start all over. It was a rigorous schedule that I had. But then I got this notice that I was to report to work at 8 a.m. to start working on the day shift. And I said, but I'm going to college. I'm a veteran. I'm using the GI Bill to go to school. I'm trying to make something of myself. And they said, well, the workload has shifted, and we need you to start Monday morning at 8 o'clock. And I said, well, if I show up Monday morning at 8 o'clock, maybe someday, if I'm lucky, I might become a floor supervisor. But if I quit this job and take a leap of faith with the GI Bill, knowing that it's going to be difficult for me and my family, in the immediate, in the long term, the opportunities are unlimited. I tendered my resignation, and I turned around and walked out into the rest of my life.
Ronald Dellums earned his master's degree in social work from UC Berkeley. He was elected to Congress in 1970 on an anti-war platform and went on to chair the House Armed Services Committee. Representative Dellums was one of many whose future was dramatically changed by the GI Bill. Professor Kathleen Friedel says the veterans' benefits spread throughout society.
And if you consider their families, I think I read somewhere in the government archives that by 1960, 70% of all Americans were either a veteran or somehow related in intimate family connections.
But over time, veterans' benefits decreased. The VA's Dennis Douglas says after the Vietnam War, the government began asking soldiers to invest their own money into the benefits program.
In point of fact, it wasn't a very good feature because they were contributing into their educational program, but the rate of return was about 2 to 1. For every $1 you put in, the government was going to put in $2 more. And it was not indexed to inflation, so there was also a situation in the early 80s when recruiting of that individual was not going that well. There weren't a lot of people clamoring to go into the military.
Sonny Montgomery, a congressman from Mississippi, decided to try to reestablish the value of the veterans' benefits.
His position really was that we need to recognize them better than we have. It doesn't matter whether it's peacetime or wartime. They are putting on a uniform. They are subject to going in harm's way, and we need to recognize that.
I was on the House Armed Services Committee. This was in the mid-80s.
Former Congressman Ron Dellums, who had benefited from the GI Bill himself, saw an opportunity to help pass legislation for the next generation of veterans.
I had finally made it onto the conference committee when the House and the Senate resolved differences between the two bills. Well, we had finished the bill. Every single issue had been resolved, with the exception of one issue. Sonny Montgomery of Mississippi had introduced a GI Bill into this bill. They get to the end and they said, "Sonny, we're not going to deal with the GI Bill this year. We promise you we'll give you some hearings next year." And they just said that they would give him hearings. Well, I'm just, you know, young guy, you know, on the committee. And so I walked over to Sonny Montgomery and I said, "Sonny, walk out of this room with me." And he got up and he and I walked out of this conference, packed with senators, packed with members of Congress. And they go, "I can't believe it. Ron Dellums from Berkeley is walking out of the room with Sonny Montgomery from Mississippi." And I said, "Sonny, look, man, you got one clean shot at this." He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "These guys have reconciled a zillion issues and billions of dollars in this bill that has taken us weeks and weeks." I said, "You think they're going to throw this bill over because of one, you know, of one item?" I said, "This is your moment. Walk back into the room and stand your ground and say, 'Nope, we're going to deal with the GI Bill on this bill.'" And I said, "Trust me, Sonny, this is your one clean shot." And he walked back in and he said, "I'm so sorry, gentlemen, but I'm going to stand my ground." And that's how the Sonny Montgomery GI Bill got into that bill.
Again, the VA's Dennis Douglas.
The Montgomery GI Bill, original return on investment was basically 9-1. Now, you had to have your pay reduced by $100 a month for the first 12 months of your military service, but you were going to get $300 a month for 36 months once you left the military. And through congressionally mandated increases, that $300 a month in 1985 has grown to over $1,000 a month for full-time training today.
The Montgomery GI Bill is still in force, but according to the College Board, the benefit only covers about 60% of the average cost of college. Still, Dennis Douglas says, it remains a strong incentive to military service.
DOD contracts for a youth attitude tracking survey every year or 2 years. It's on a regular cycle. And the Department of Defense claims that it is regularly the number one reason people put down when they're considering going into the military.
Yes, of course. You know, the psychology is a bit different. That in World War II, the huge percentage of those of us who left the service had gone into the service involuntarily, and we had been in a war.
Bill Gates Sr.
Of course, now the people in the service are in a war too, and to me, I can't imagine that we wouldn't extend to those men and women benefits along the same line as those of us who were in World War II enjoyed.
I'm sure the GIs in Iraq aren't going to get half as good a deal as we did.
Poet Lawrence Ferlinghetti.
I mean, the war is being fought by the poor people of America. It's being fought by the third world in America.
And it would seem to me that in the 21st century, if we care about our young people, and if we believe that poverty is an obscenity in the 21st century in the wealthiest nation in the world, then we ought to use the GI Bill as a practical example of a society investing in its young people.
Former Congressman Ronald Dellums.
And I think the GI Bill is a classic example of what can be done when you put the resources up and you make education available to hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people who never would have had it otherwise.
These, you know, for the most part, were people who perhaps went off to war as boys, saw the world, and came back home and decided that they were going to make something of themselves.
The VA's Dennis Douglas got his master's degree on the GI Bill.
I mean, if you stop and think back, these are people that were born in the 20s and are now well over 80 years old. What they accomplished with the opportunities presented to them, I would venture to say, won't be repeated anytime soon.
The next chapter in the story of the GI Bill is yet to be written. The story of the GI Bill was produced by Ben Trefney. Engineering and sound design by Eric Wayne. We received production help from Ben Tempchin and Neil Swinkles. The story of the GI Bill is a production of KALW News. We received funding from the Friedman Family Foundation and the Charles and Helen Schwab Foundation.